What about the relationship?
I mean, the relationship, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I'll start this off. This is a Grand Canyon Historical Society oral history. Today is the 18th of February, 2016. We're in the house of Tom Martin and Hazel Clark. And with us today are Irvin Cook and his nephew, Raymond Cook. Irvin Cook's wife,
Janet,
and Raymond Cook's wife,
Krista Cook.
Krista, how do you spell your last name? Your first name.
Krista, Christ with an A. C-H-R-I-S-T-A.
Thank you. And Janet?
J-A-N-E-T.
Okay. And Raymond?
R-A-Y-M-O-N-D.
And
Irvin Cook. E-R-V-I-N-C-O-O-K.
Thank you. And Wayne Rainey is here today as well with the, he's the president of the Grand Canyon Historical Society. Wayne, how do you spell your last name?
R-A-N-N-E-Y.
Thank you. And my name is Tom Martin. Tom, M-A-R-T-I-N. So, Irvin, you lost your brother in the 1956 air crash between TWA and United.
Right.
What can you tell me about your brother?
Well, when we were kids, I remember one time when we were in our teens. I was probably about 12 years old. And I came home and my mother said to me, you know, when you walk in the door, you're whistling and happy. And when your brother David walks in the door, there's a big cloud over his head and he's gloom and doom. And the only thing, criticism I have of my brother is that he took life too seriously. But he knew exactly what he wanted to be from the time he was a little kid, a chemist. He became a chemist. And he was working for, do you remember, Raymond, what company?
He had just finished working for Wyandotte Chemical, and he was going on to a new position, and I'm not really sure.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, he did become a chemist. Yeah. But he was a very serious guy. He was in the National Guard, and incidentally, that National Guard unit, the 129th Infantry, went to Bataan. And he didn't go because he'd gotten married, had two children, and he was a chemist. And those people did not go to war and shouldn't have. That was fine. But
so how much older was Dave than you?
He was born in 1918. I was born in 1921. So it was close to 3 years, 3 years older. And he did have a lot of friends. I remember when he was in his teens, there was always a bunch of teens around, and they were really a bunch of goofballs, but they had a good time, and he lived life at the fullest. He enjoyed being a teen. He went to college in Chicago, University of Chicago, and that's where he got his degree. And when my turn came to come to college, my dad didn't want to pay the bill. But my mother talked him into sending me off to a little college in Iowa, which was a good thing for me. The reason I got into that was she was so concerned about me. I got in with a bad bunch. These were bad times in Chicago. Well, Capone was in charge. There was a lot of drug stuff. There was just a lot of stuff going on. I worked in a drugstore, and I can remember some guy getting his head shot off by one of the gangsters because they thought he was a crook, you know, some other gang, and they found out later he was just some poor guy working at a furniture store and had nothing to do with him. But anyway, it was a tough bunch, and she wanted me out of there, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. But we loved David dearly, and He lived life at the fullest when he was a teen, and the folks gave him full support.
How do you mean he lived life to the fullest?
Well, he had a girlfriend up in Michigan, and we had a cottage up there. Dad had kind of got it by accident. He loaned a guy $1,000. When the Depression came, he couldn't pay it back. We got the cottage. He had a mortgage on it. So we started going up there because of polio, actually. Polio was a big thing in Chicago then, and there was a kid named Schmidt that lived in a lung, that's the way he lived, and he was in the papers a lot. So it kept us out of that, the possibility of catching polio. And it turned out to be a good thing. But Dave used to come up when he was younger, at the first, when and he had a girlfriend up there, and that was before he met his wife. But he had a summer romance. I saw he knew how to live.
Can you tell me a little bit about Dave meeting Raymond's mother?
Well, she was, I think he met her at a dance at the Trianon Ballroom in the south end of Chicago. That's where I think they met. And he used to go over there. I remember one time he was working at a drugstore. I was too. But he got a $20 bill, a counterfeit bill. And he didn't know it. And so he tried to spend it at the Trianon Ballroom. They caught it. And he was stuck. He was out his 20 bucks, I tell you. But anyway, I think that's pretty much where he met her. He loved to go dancing. He was a dancer. And I am too, so it must be something that ran in the family, as was her father. You know. So I know very little about from then on. She was a telephone operator. And by the time after they got married, she became a supervisor. And everybody thought she was such a good businesswoman, and they found out after Dave died that she really wasn't, you know, but we just thought, the family thought she was, because she did so well career-wise. She did an excellent job. She was a lovely lady. She, after he died, she used to come to visit us in Missouri when I had kids, you know, and they came, my folks brought her, and they, we always enjoyed her visits. Lovely lady.
Irv, this is Wayne asking that.
Yeah, Wayne.
Just wondered if you can relate the story, if you don't mind, when you got the news that your brother David was involved in this tragic
plane
crash.
Well, I saw it in the paper on Saturday. It was on a Saturday. I saw him, didn't think anything of it. I knew he was out in California. But what I didn't know is that he finished his business. He had an open-ended ticket. And so he had to get a seat then, you know, get on a plane. Well, Thursday was full. Friday was full. He's going back to Detroit. Saturday was open. So that's how he got on that flight. And
but you weren't intimately aware that...
I didn't know at all. Yeah. Until Sunday evening, my mother called me. And she said, Dave's been in a airplane accident. I never connected the two. And I said, what hospital is he in? I need to send him some flowers. And she said, he's gone. I said, what do you mean he's gone? She said, he's not here anymore. I can't.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I never had this happen before.
Yeah.
So all these years, I never cried at the funeral.
Yeah, that's all right.
I thought I could accept death, but anyway, because I'm not afraid of dying myself. I'm ready for it. Well, in the war, I was a pilot, and...
hey, Irv, can I step
in
for
a second?
Yeah, you
can ask me a question.
Because we're kind of getting a little ahead here.
Okay.
I wanted to back up a minute, because it sounds like Dave, you mentioned Dave went into the National Guard.
Yeah, he was a French horn player. Excellent. Number one. He was, you know, they had several French horns. He became number one. And excellent. I remember he studied for hours, played for hours practicing. Yeah. He was much better disciplined than I was that way.
Did his going into the Guard inspire you to
No.
go into the Air Force?
No. When I was about 15, I saw a picture of Randolph Field and the pilot training. And I told my father then, I said, someday I'm going to, that's what I'm going to do.
Is that right?
Not thinking that there'd be a war and I'd be doing it, but that's kind of what I wanted to do.
Did you talk to Dave about that at all?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Were you guys close that way?
No, we really weren't. Dave, when he was 18, going on 45. He was always way ahead of himself, you know, I mean, year-wise. Very smart guy. And I was just an average Joe, you know. And so, no, we didn't. We got along well, but we didn't relate too well. I can remember one time when I was a kid, a young kid, and he was a young kid. I was about 5 years old, and I threw a tantrum at home. The folks were gone. And he said, cut that out. And I didn't, you know. And so anyway, he just beat the crap out of me. And I decided that that didn't pay. And that was the last tantrum I ever had. So he was a good brother.
Did you have any other brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I had a younger brother that was born in 1933.
So he's
12, might have mentioned 12 years. Turned out to be a half brother. I found out when my mother before my mother died.
He was 12 years younger than you then.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you play a musical instrument as well?
I started playing a trombone in grade school and did for a year or two, and they changed directors, and the new director was listening, and he came over, and the trombones were playing along with the cornets, playing by ear. He said, "You're fired. We can't use you. If you're not reading the music, we don't want you." So that was the end of my trombone career.
And so were you still living at home when Dave left home for college?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after he got out of college, where did he go from there?
Well, he went to work. I don't know. I know he worked for Monsanto for quite a few years. That might have been the first job. But he was with them. That's how he got to Detroit. Started in Chicago,
right,
and went to Detroit. I think they have a big place there in Detroit.
Okay.
But he was working for a different company when he died. I remember that. Right. He'd left Monsanto.
Right. Mm-hmm. When you...
Oh, I would like to say this about it. He called home before, when he was talking to her about what, he got the flight and so on. He said, "I've got a real big, good surprise for you, and I'll tell you when I get home." They think he found another job in California.
Okay.
Is what he was lined up for. Uh-huh.
So I just want to make sure I get the timeline straight then. Did you complete college before you went into the
service? No, I didn't. I got in 2 years. First, December 7th, I went home for Christmas. I had a year and a half. And I thought I'd sign up to the Army Air Corps. They didn't take you then without 2 years college. Uh-huh. And I said, "Well, but I almost got it all." And he said, "No, you got to have 2 years." So he said, "Come back when you get your 2 years in." And the Navy guy was sitting there. He says, "We'll take you." And I said, "I don't like the idea of the base moving when I'm moving. It doesn't sound good to me. Thank you anyway." So I waited. Well, by the time I got around, I was working. I hitchhiked out to Portland, Oregon, and worked in a pea factory that summer after my 2 years. And I got my draft notice there. And by the time I'd gotten that, though, they had opened it up to anybody with high school. They eliminated that feature. But I signed up in that summer of 1942, signed up. And I didn't get called till the end of January, because they were so filled up. The classes were all filled up. They were backed up. All these guys had signed up. So I went into the service in January 29th, 1943. And I graduated from, got my wings at Seymour, Indiana, at Freeman Field, in November 3rd, 1943. And my folks came down from Chicago, lived in Chicago, went to the reunion. We have reunions now. We didn't have...
Graduation.
Yeah, graduation. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. And at this point then, Dave was he had finished college.
He had lived in an apartment, Southside Chicago. Southside Chicago was nice in those days. Pretty tough now. But he lived in an apartment and had two kids and had a nice life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then you served overseas.
After I graduated, they ask you what you want to get into. And I said 820s. I decided 820s would be a great I found out later it wasn't the best place to be. But in A-20s, they shipped me right to a combat crew center, B-26s. And I wrote my mother and I said, Mom, they've made a terrible mistake. I'm sure that I'll get it straightened out. And I didn't know then the Army put you where they wanted you. You know, they didn't care what I wanted. But anyway, I loved the B-26. It was a good airplane.
Where was the training center?
Barksdale Field, Louisiana. It's actually Shreveport. Loved it there. Oh, and then my wife, I had been married. I got married in 42, fall of 42. And I was working on an airfield in St. Joe, Missouri, working all night, 12 hours a night, putting in this airfield, which I landed to later years.
Nice.
Landed at, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So then after the service, you continued on in your aviation career?
No, I didn't. No. Later on, I joined not the Air National Guard, just the National Guard to get the money. You know, just I needed some extra money. I always had an extra job. And while in there, a thing came out. They were looking for a pilot to fly the general round, Missouri. And I thought, you know, my career wasn't settled yet. And I thought I'll finish it out with the service. Uh-huh. So that Saturday that he had the crash, I was at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, taking a physical to get in this job. They were interested in having me. And so after I learned that he had been killed on an airplane and had already been through the war, I thought, you know, I just better bow out and I'm going to stick with what I'm doing and see how that goes. Because you're more danger with a small plane than you are a bigger plane, you know. Oh, incidentally, when I came home, I went to TWA. I got out early because they saw the war was ending. They wanted to shuck out that payroll, you know. I got out July 1st, 45, went to TWA, and they said, oh, we'd love to have you. What did you do in the service? I said, I flew B-26s. So were you in combat? Yes, we don't want you. Well, they were off base because you had emergencies and you really were going to be better. And what they were looking for was people with a lot of hours, air transport. Well, you're just sitting there bored to death anyway. So anyway, that didn't work. But I ended up with an electric utility and I loved it.
Were you climbing poles?
No. I was in marketing,
okay,
dealing with people. I found out that engineers don't like people problems. I did. So we got along fine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. No, thank you, because I wanted to kind of paint this picture of these two brothers growing up. Yes, you had another brother, but basically 12 years younger, so you weren't necessarily as close as I think maybe you were to Dave, as an older brother, only 3 years older. Both of you went to college, but you truncated your college.
I finished later on.
Did you?
Okay. When I was 50 years old, I went back and got the degree. I got in a job that required a degree, so I went back and got it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Didn't learn much, but I got it.
So in the late 40s, early 50s, how much did you and Dave stay in touch?
Well, right after the war, we met at a resort, Schwartz Resort, up in northern Illinois, and had a time together, the two couples. It was wonderful. We really enjoyed it. Yeah, I remember. We got pictures of it. I still got them.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really a wonderful time, and we were able to visit, and of course everything, there was no problems now, you know. Everybody was doing well.
Had Raymond been born by then?
No.
Okay.
No. He was still a glint in my brother's eye.
Okay. Nice. And so then, did you stay close with Dave over the next 10 years?
We used to write, mm-hmm. And then I had, our first child died, had a brain tumor. And after that, my wife was depressed and so on. We went to visit them in Royal Oak, Michigan. And we had a really nice visit. It was really great. So, And this was 53 or 4. It was shortly before the crash. So it was wonderful. We realized how important it was. And we got to know each other better. I was telling Raymond, one day we went shopping with her. And she came back. I remember it was $51 or $52 worth of groceries, which was a lot of groceries then. And she laid them out on the counter. And she brought her husband in, my brother. And she said, "Now I want to show you what I spent for this. It's $51 or $2. You're always complaining about the budget. And this is it. This is where it's going." So I thought that was pretty good. She knew she had a witness. There couldn't be much discussion. Anyway, we had an excellent time. I was always happy for that time.
How long did you stay with them then?
My wives, I've had two die on me. I have this lovely lady here last 3 years. God bless her. She's been a joy. And we always stayed in a motel. Always. We did then. We like
it. Well, did that visit? 53.
We are going to go visit Raymond at his house, so first time in history, so we'll see how
nice.
It goes.
Yeah,
I'll let you know.
Thank you. Thank you. No, I was thinking 1953, 54. You'd suffered the loss of a child. Your wife was struggling with that, clearly. How long did you spend with Dave and his wife?
I think we were there about 4 days.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
About 4 days. Yeah. We'd driven all around Lake Michigan and then ended up at Royal Oak.
Okay.
And it was about 4 days. And then later, and we saw Raymond, after he died, I came to visit. I went to Cleveland to a lighting conference, and I flew over to Detroit and visited Raymond, and Raymond was married at that time. And Dorothy, had a nice visit. Stayed, I don't know, 2 or 3 days, something like that.
Okay, now I want to get much closer to Wayne's question. In the spring of 56, it sounds like Dave was working for a chemical company, mm-hmm. but he wasn't going to stay with that company.
Yeah, that's the feeling we had. He was looking. He had his resume up.
How did you know that? Well, first of all, what were you doing then in the spring of 56? And how did you get a sense that Dave was looking to change careers? Or change
I must have got it from her. We probably got it when we visited him. I'm pretty sure he must have been indicating that he wasn't happy. One thing I know, I know he got some patents and stuff. He developed some new insulation for electrical wiring. Right, he got patents for it. And I remember he explained to me, I said, "Well, when you started," he said, no, "you don't start, you build on what somebody else has done." What I built on, he named somebody, other people, and then you complete the project, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
He explained that. I thought that was good. But anyway, that's what I know about it.
Okay. And then you received a call from your mother saying that David was lost.
It's the first time I've ever cried.
No worries. I've seen enough tears from Raymond. This is a very hard journey. What happened then? How did things progress from that? Because I know there was a service at the South Room eventually, and what else do you remember of those times?
Oh, about the trip. I remember at the trip that Roy. Told me that he and Dave had made a pact that if anybody, either one of them died early, the other family would look after the wife, the widow, and their kids.
Remind me again who Roy Kramer was?
Roy was the brother-in-law of Dorothy's sister, who's the wife of Dave. Dorothy was the wife of Dave. And her name was Mary, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Roy and Mary.
Kramer.
Can I tell them more?
Yeah.
Later on, after some years, Well, first thing, one point, some years after they he had died, they got a lot of money from it. He, for one thing, his company had a bunch of an insurance policy. I remember that. He got that, and the company got that. And then they got it off of the airlines. And everybody thought that she was such a good businesswoman. You know, she'd done so well with the phone company. And she called my dad one day and wanted $5,000. She said, to bail her out. Well, he said, I'll be glad to give it to you if you let me come up to Detroit. He lived in near Chicago. They had retired by that time. If you let me come up there and help you, get this, find out what the problem is and get you going again, you know, solid ground. And she said, no, I won't do that. And he said, well, in that case, I'll give you $500 and you can just have it. But you're only going to get more money because otherwise you'll be back for more, another five. Yeah. So anyway, that was left that way. Well, after she came to visit us one time with my parents, some years had gone by, and she gets a call from Mary, and we said, what's she calling? Why would she? Was it an emergency or something? You know, thinking somebody was sick. And she said, no, she needed money. Needs money? What, you know, why is she calling you? Well, she'd been getting money from them all these years. The looking after was Dorothy looking after them.
Okay.
It wasn't, and apparently they had gotten large sums of money over the years. And then I find out from Raymond that a brother was also doing some of that too. So she was supporting the whole bunch. And of course the money ran out. You know, naturally.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know whether you know it, Raymond, or not, but there was some speculation that she might have committed suicide by ramming that bridge. Yeah. She went 3 o'clock in the morning at 70 miles an hour and hit a bridge about mid. Sounded suspiciously like it. She was out of the money. She was down, you know, back to the wall, and could have been.
And for clarification here. Because my misunderstanding was that Dorothy had approached Roy for some funds, but it was actually Mary. It was Dave's wife's sister who was approaching Dave's wife, your mother, Raymond, for funding.
Right, it was just the reverse.
You, just for clarification.
Yeah. Okay. No, it was a reverse. It was the other way. Yeah.
So they assumed that with the financial award from
that she had plenty of money.
Yes, which you made very clear in the interview we did.
Yeah.
That she didn't.
Exactly.
If she'd let Dad in, I'm sure they could have changed it all. You know.
Can I clarify the money thing?
Okay.
Raymond Cook. There were two elements to it. One, as Irv is discussed. Mary and Roy did approach my mom for money. They wanted to build and buy a supermarket in Des Plaines, Illinois. And so she did loan them. It was about $35,000 to invest in this supermarket. Well, what happened was they got the supermarket built and opened, and right within a week or two after it opened, they closed the street to construction. It was closed for a year. So they went belly up and lost the money. So that was one element. The other element that I really have just learned in recent years, because I'm a disabled veteran, she had a brother, Bill Powers, who approached her for money. And Bill was in the Battle of the Bulge in Europe.
He was in World War II, I remember that.
And World War II. And was injured, and he gave her some song and dance story that he needed money to hire an attorney to sue the VA. Well, what I have learned as a disabled veteran is you don't need money to sue the VA. You can have the DAV, which is the Department of Veterans Affairs, represent you. You can have the American Legion represent you. There are a number of groups. VFW can represent you. You don't need any money to sue the VA. So it was a total bogus story to get money from his sister, which he did successfully. And it was, I think it was about $25,000 that he got from her. And the sad part was she died an alcoholic and broke. And that really didn't have to occur. But she was naive to the world, I guess.
Yeah, and she just really was. Everybody thought she wasn't. She was. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only cried twice in my life at funerals, and I've buried a lot of people, looked after a lot of people. One was my son, and today...
Well, Irv, this is Wayne again. You don't have to feel bad about that, because when Grand Canyon National Park decided to own this tragedy, which they just did about 10 or 12 years ago, a lot of family members had closure like you're having right now. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. There's been a lot of family members who had this whole tragic thing that happened to their families kind of swept under the rug because of the times that people lived in then. And there was a lot of heartache and heartbreak, and we've even come to learn with some of the families there was a lot of alcoholism and depression
involved
with this crash. And people have been so thankful that the National Park Service and the Historical Society and everybody, folks like Tom and myself have been involved, have allowed people to feel these feelings. And you don't need to feel bad about it at all. And we're happy that you're feeling it and you're letting it out, because that's probably what needed to happen back then.
Thank you.
Very, very much
so. I've had two wives die on me before this lovely lady came in my life. Never shed a tear, because they were sick beforehand. So you do your grieving ahead of time, you know.
Yeah.
But in an accident, you don't have a chance to grieve ahead of time. That's the problem.
And I think Wayne's touched upon a real good point that no one's really had permission to revisit this until in the last decade, until very recently. Mm-hmm. And so these issues are still raw with people, and this is what I'm learning with these oral interviews, is it's still very, very much a lot of caring people that are still grieving.
Didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. Didn't know it.
That's interesting.
So there was a service at the South Rim that you went to?
Yeah, I remember. What? I don't remember much details. Did you tell them about the lady that acted up?
I think I did.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. your deal.
Do you remember? What do you remember about that service?
Very little. It just had a nice service. But after you mentioned it to me, Raymond, I did remember there was... It's kind of embarrassing. That woman kind of went nuts and threw herself on the graves and stuff.
You could tell them the airlines flew our family.
Oh, I need to tell that. Right, yeah, right, okay. I flew to from Kansas City to Denver, a ticket that the office had sent me. United. You're right. And the waitress, after I got my seat, she came to me and she said, "Why have you got this ticket? You know, it's different than the others. I'm interested in what's behind it." And then I told her about it, and she said, "Oh, okay." So we get to Denver, and then everybody that of the relatives were going on one plane to
Winslow.
Was it Winslow? I've forgotten. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And they announced and told him, and went up and saw him. They had a radar man. Now, radar was just coming in, and they were putting it on the airplane, but there was very few of them. But they got a hold of one. They could not have any chance of losing that plane.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so they had three men in the cockpit, which was unusual. This is propeller days. And that third man was the radar man. It was. I thought that was of interest, that they made darn sure that plane got there. Yeah.
So this was an event that was a number of years after the crash. Do you remember when it was?
August of 1956. This was the...
August of 1956.
When they...
Okay.
put the headstone up and...
Yeah, yeah, this is right. Yeah, after we went to the funeral.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember 56. I didn't remember what month
it was. The reason it was, I know it's August, was they had a birthday cake for my brother, and his birthday was August 3rd. And so I remember celebrating his birthday on our flight to Denver. Okay. So that's why I know it was.
We have a picture of our family in front of Bright Angel Lodge that day. And remember, you're there, you're 12 years old.
Right.
I was 35 years old. And my mother and father were there. They're gone.
Dorothy.
Dorothy's gone.
Roy.
Who else is
there? My brother, David.
Roy.
Your brother, David's gone. How many are left? I'm left and you're left. Who else? I think that's it.
That's it.
I'd love to see a copy of that photograph if we could see that.
I've given it to the archives.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
They've got it.
Yeah.
They've got that picture.
So, I mean, and they're younger people. I mean, you know, they weren't all older than us. It was all ages, so.
Yeah.
Interesting, they're all gone.
Yeah.
And so that plane went from Denver to Winslow, and then you went by bus up.
Yeah,
up
that's
to
it.
The rim.
Yeah.
Okay, on old Route 66, on historic Route 66.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then?
I've always lived on towns most of my life, close to 66.
Is that right?
Starting with Chicago, right? Yeah.
So how did the loss of your elder brother then impact you moving forward?
Oh, I decided not to take the pilot's job, that was it. I mean, there was, you know, from then on. At that time, I'd just gotten into, I used to work in the plant, making electricity. Did not like it. I didn't care for it, but I was learning. And so I had a good background, and I went up into the marketing department. Loved it, found a home. So in 56, by then I knew what I was wanting to do, and that was it. In fact, I was the last one in our company to go from the bottom to a department head. And after I got to be a department head, some years later, we used to sell steam to the packing house from the extract steam after you got through making electricity. There was a bunch of packing houses in St. Joe. Nobody knew anything about it. And so they came to me and they said, you used to work down there. You've got it. You know? So I got stuff by just because there was nobody left, you know?
But you had the history. Yeah.
But I had the background.
Nice.
That's the problem today. They hire them right out of college. They don't really know the business. And they'll tell you, well, we don't need to know the business. We know the financial end and so on. They do. That's my feeling.
As an elder brother, was Dave? Did he inspire you? Did he help pull the best out of you, or
not particularly? I love that he was the first, because the folks were focused on him. They made sure he had a wonderful education, but he put up with a lot of crap too. And I was second, and by the time I come along, they're bored, you know, with this racing kid bit, and I got away with murder, and I loved it. I loved being number two in the family.
Can I ask you a question? What impact do you think my dad's death had on Maud and Lee, their parents?
I think the biggest thing, it really hurt, yeah, it hurt them. Yeah, they didn't. There, you know, he was their pride and joy. And now he's gone, and which is fine with me. Let him be. He had to put up with all the stuff that went with it.
Right.
That was fine with me. I think what really hurt him was the fact they couldn't help Dorothy. I really think that got to Dad. That he wanted to help, and he could have helped, and she wouldn't let him in.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's hard to admit that you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's...
Do you think it affected Maud at all? His mom? or in any way?
No, I really don't. I think she accepted it pretty good. And that was it. No, my folks accepted death well. I think that's for,
okay.
And I always thought I did. You know, I buried 7 people in my, and it didn't bother me. But boy, this has today.
What about Dorothy's parents? How did they handle this loss of their son-in-law?
You know, I don't know much about that end of the family. You have to get it from, yeah, I don't know.
Her parents, Dorothy's parents were divorced. I'm trying to think how many. She had, I think, 3 brothers and a sister. I think that's right. Her mother was the president of the Women's Railway Association in Chicago, and she worked for Santa Fe Railroad, I know that. And she was a very standalone-ish type of woman, very strong. And so I don't know that she was impacted all that much because she was, I don't know, so focused on her career. And my mother really was not a family woman. She was more career-oriented.
No, she's career-oriented.
And she didn't want to have kids. So I don't know that it impacted my mother's mother at all. It impacted, I think, her brothers and sisters, as I said. They took advantage of her, and that was unfortunate. But they had a strange, we need to take care of each other relationship. At least my mother had that position. Obviously, her brothers and sisters didn't. And I hate to say it, but in a sense, she was a sucker. But that happens in life, and life goes on.
Irv, what else do you remember about Dave that you'd like us to remember about him?
I'm thinking. I thought this was a funny story. I think it'll be all right. He had this girlfriend, and I remember them being in the canoe. We had a canoe on the lake, and he was paddling along. And he told me that after they got out of sight, she was leaning over, looking at the water, looking at herself in the water, and she had a bathing suit on, and the breast fell out. and so she just put it back, and that was the end of that. But I thought that was a good story.
Yeah. Oh, that's cute.
She had an odd name. I wish I could remember, like Thelma, something like that.
Was that he was engaged to a gal before he married my mother?
I kind of think it might have been her, because we thought it was going to go places.
Yeah.
Turned out to be a summer romance, really. Mm-hmm. She was a farm girl. I mean, they were poles apart in their background, and I just kind of questioned whether it ever would have worked, you know. Yeah. So,
Irv, did you have any special feelings today when you were at Desert View and saw that special?
You know, this is what brought it out. No, I didn't have any emotions, you know, except I really loved seeing everything, you know.
Yeah.
And particularly the where the tower was.
Right.
Yeah. See, I hadn't seen that before. That was new to me.
Yeah.
And I've been out here several times. In fact, after we stayed at the Grand Canyon last night, I realized that I'd stayed there before, the same group.
Neswick Lodge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my story.
I'm gonna ask you one more time, though.
Okay.
Keep telling me Dave's stories. That was a good one about the canoe.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, he never had one strip in front of him, so I can't report that.
Not that he told you anyway.
Yeah. I was trying to think.
Did you?
Oh, he used to. I'll tell you, when he was a young guy, he was in his teens. I think he was about 18, so that would have meant I was about 15. And he told me this. He was going with a girl, I think it was Dorothy Larson, in Chicago. blonde girl, good-looking gal. I remember she lived down the street, and she was going. He was going with her, and I don't think it was going anywhere. But he said that because he had other interests. I think he was going with somebody else at the time. Probably no, it wouldn't have been Dorothy yet. I don't think, but it might have been. But anyway, so he told me that this girl asked him if he'd ever had any sex with anybody, and he said no. And he says, well, I guess he wasn't quite 18. That's where the 18 comes in. Let's say he was 70. She said, if you get to 18 and you haven't had any, let me know. I'll take care of you.
He must have been a handsome man.
He was good looking, yeah. He said even after he got married, women would... Yeah, he wasn't a typical cook. He didn't look typical. In fact, he was so untypical, because the cooks never had problem with women chasing after him. That wasn't... We weren't good looking enough, you know. But he was. And, oh gosh, I can't think of what I was going to tell you. Oh, years later, just in recent years, I'd say about 10 years ago, I found a cook that was my grandparents, my grandfather's brother.
Hmm.
He was 100 years old, and he lived down near Branson, Missouri. I found him. Can't think of his first name, because his last name was Cook. Remember his wife's name, Ocean. That's an odd name, Ocean Cook. But I walked in to see him, first time I'd ever seen him. There was David.
Wow.
And even my wife used to think that, said, David was not your father's son. He doesn't look like him. But there was David, and I knew then he was a cook. But there was, he was getting it off another branch.
Yeah,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, same family though.
Did you write to each other when you were in the service?
Oh yeah, yeah. I wrote to him. Yeah, yeah. I let him, kept him up.
Did you ever do any activities together when you were
not
like
really.
High school or grade school at all?
No,
or,
no? His bunch was way ahead of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too different
in age. Yeah.
And with my younger brother it was worse yet. Yeah, because it was 12 years, so we never was hardly any until after we got older.
Is he still alive?
No.
He died. No, okay. He died of cancer.
Hmm.
He was the one that was a half brother. That's where the cancer come from. Because cooks have not had cancer.
Hmm.
It's not been in our family.
Okay.
You know, Irv, you mentioned the last time you visited with your brother up at the cabin in Michigan.
Uh-huh.
That you all took pictures.
Uh-huh.
And you quite easily said, I still have those pictures. And I know
I think I got them, yeah.
I think, you know, a picture of you with your brother would be a nice little addition
to
this oral
history.
Oh, okay.
I'll see if we can find. I know where they are. I have a whole box of pictures that I gave my younger daughter to keep. And so every once in a while I go through them and I'll dig through them and I can send them to you.
Yeah, that might be the last picture, you know, that you had with your brother. And
oh, I see what you mean. Oh, I know we got the one where we went on that vacation to Swartz.
Do you?
Yeah, I got one where, I don't know who's hitting who, but I think David's got a big paddle from a canoe.
We have that picture.
And he's spanking Dorothy.
I think we have that picture.
Yeah.
When we leave here, we're going back home. And they're going to stay with us for the next couple of days. And one of the things that we're going to do is go through some old photos. So we might be able to...
I think you may have. I would have thought we would have sent them to you.
Yeah, I think we got some. It was Saddle Lake was the name of the lake.
Well, no, that wasn't Saddle Lake.
Or, no, that, okay.
No, this is at Swartz Resort. It's up north of...
One of the fellas diving into a lake, and we'll have to dig them out and see.
There could be some from Saddle.
Yeah.
With him, but these were at a different lake.
You can identify them.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
You're a good communicator.
This is Janet. Did Dave ever talk about the new baby? Did you ever discuss the new baby?
Not much. You mean when they were born? No. I was away at college.
When Rob was born.
When Rob was born. Oh, I see. Oh, no, when Rob was born. We had no inkling that he was a half brother that time.
But was he excited about the baby, or did he indicate anything?
I think we just tolerated it. We didn't think Mom ought to be having a kid at her age, you know. I really think. After the child came, we loved him. You know, it was great. But for me, when that kid showed up, I no longer got any attention, you know. So I went back to being the shotgun runner or something, the second fiddle again, you know. And I remember going away to college, and I came back. I went in September, came back for Christmas, and I could tell my room had been changed. I was no longer living there. You know, I mean, what was my bedroom? And I realized it. I thought, you know, this is not home anymore for me. I'm out of the picture because, I mean, it's like putting a drop of water in a bucket. And the water closes over. I was gone, and the whole thing closed over and went on without me.
You'd been moved out.
I'd been moved out. I did the same thing with my daughter when she came home. we just moved. And she said, "Where's my bedroom?" I said, "Well, you don't have a bedroom in this house, you know, this new house." Mm-hmm.
I know when I was young, at the time of the accident, we were overrun by the press.
Oh, I bet you were.
Did that impact you at all? Were you ever
not a bit
at all? Not at all.
I had a friend that worked on the news press at home, and I mentioned it to him. But nobody paid any attention.
No kidding.
It was just as well.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Right. That's just curious.
I was telling him I was on D-Day, and we did a mission. And anyway, I was on a ship one time coming from Europe. And there was a guy, a historian, and he was talking about World War II. Then he had one on D-Day. And well, we'd gotten acquainted ahead of time. I'd introduced myself, and he knew I was there. So during the thing, he said, "This guy, you know, we got a guy here from D-Day. Is there anybody out?" Now, there was probably 1,500 British on the plane. Was anybody else here on D-Day, either ground or in the air? Not one. There wasn't one. Well, then when his thing was over, here came everybody. Of course, she just assumed that Janet had been with me then. And I didn't like it. You know, well, I thought, if a guy was going to live like this where people just won't let you alone, you know, they want to hear the story and they want this. And it was fine. But I didn't want it to continue. You know, I could see. That would be a pest, wouldn't it? Yep. You lose you give up your freedom.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 You never did tell me that. Thanks for telling me. I didn't. Yeah, at home where I was, nobody seemed to care. Even though that TWA came from Kansas City.
Yeah.
That was kind of odd, I thought. Yeah. They weren't exactly interested. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What should we be asking you that we haven't?
Boy, you've done well, I tell you. You've probed deep, and I appreciate the tears because I got rid of it. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. No, thank you.
We should probably take a few pictures while you're here.
Oh, we'd like to get a picture of you. What do you mean?
Everybody wants pictures of Tom.
No.
Well, we got some pictures we could send you because we took pictures up, obviously, at the canyon. So we've got them at the...
Oh, we got some. All different kinds.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
I'll send you. What would be really wonderful, too, is if you guys are going to head back and look at photos in Phoenix now, as you mentioned, keep us in mind.
Okay.
Okay.
And, you can just use a regular camera to take a picture of the picture.
Oh, I see.
Without doing a high-res scanning or whatever. And then just send us an email, low-res. Okay. That'd be wonderful to see those.
Okay.
What did the guys love so much back in the 20s and 30s? Wasn't it a raccoon coat?
Yes.
I got a picture of Dave with one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, anyway, next time I get to my daughter's, which will be April, I'll dig through that, and whatever we got, we'll send you.
That'd be fun.
Send you copies.
That'd be fun. I think Ray would like that as well.
I never thought of that. Yeah.
You know, Irv, you've done a great service for your brother here, because his story's going to live now, and people of Grand Canyon are very interested in this story. And through our friendship with Ray, who came to this event we had 10 years ago, we've all gotten to be friends with him and Krista. And,
yeah. You know, well, he sure thinks a lot of you guys, I'll tell you.
Well, your brother's story is going to loom large in the whole tragedy in terms of, there's a lot of people we don't talk to and aren't involved, but your brother is...
Here's a good example, though. I was in the war. My story's dead, pretty much, although I'm secretary of our group. But and here's the one that was an innocent bystander, so to speak, and his story's going to go on forever. So he made his mark, didn't he?
Sir, I beg to differ. I believe your story is equally important, and I don't believe it's
I don't
dead
feel
at
that
all.
Way, though.
So, well, the rest of us may differ, yeah. Sir, okay. Please.
I was a little cog in a big wheel. That was about it.
Well, it was a bunch of little cogs that made the world change for better. And we thank you for your service. Just to get that on tape here.
We talked. Raymond and I have talked about the war. He gave me a new view of it. Yeah, so you always can learn a little more.
Yeah.
He was in a different part of it. So in Vietnam, that was a bad war. If there ever was a good war, we had a good one. You knew who the enemy was.
Right.
Yeah. We haven't known that since, really.
Well, there's going to be a little bit of an event this summer because it's the 60th anniversary.
Oh, is that right? So when's that going to be?
Well, it's going to be June 30th. There's a park employee, Ian Huff, that kind of did the lead on getting this as a National Historic Landmark, recognized by the federal government. And he's been writing to us and saying there'll probably be something on June 30th, 2016.
I think you're going to have to tell us, because I doubt if I can...
Make it again?
Make it. I don't know.
Yeah.
We had I'll trouble with the air.
I'll be here, but he's...
The altitude's difficult.
We've been going to Europe twice a year. We got a system where we can go pretty cheap. And we're even thinking of giving that up. It's getting over there. And back. Well, not getting back. We generally take a ship one way.
Well, you married a younger gal there. And
well, I married her for her looks and her money, you know.
Yeah, when he married her, he said, she's almost 20 years younger than me, but if she dies, she dies.
Well, maybe she'll drive you on Route 66 out here in June.
The problem was, we met on a ship 23 years ago, when her husband was alive, my wife was alive, and we were sat at the same table for a week and became friends.
Oh, nice.
He was just getting sick. He was just coming down with his problem. My wife was towards the end of her problem and died 2 years later. And in the meantime, after that, we kept in touch because of that, that we were both had spouses sick. She worked, so I talked to him and encouraged him. And time went by. And so, finally, he died. But in the meantime, I got married again. She died. And now I was free again. So 3 years after he died, we got to talking over the phone. It got more often, more often. Finally, I went up to see her. And that was the end of that.
Fun.
But,
fun.
Yeah.
Let's get the camera and we'll take a picture.
You can cut the last part off. She's been the best thing that ever happened.
I don't want to cut that off.
What I found is that life furnishes the right wife for the right time. Except the second one didn't work. But the first and third, that's what I need, is the odd number. So the next one would be the other way, so that wasn't going to work. There wouldn't be another one.